hitched a sky current. That's a rotten shame. We got along. Emerson's affected burr was completely gone as he mourned the loss of a friend. He peered through the crowd. Can you think of an official enough reason for us to shove in there? Most of the Fen would get out of our way out of habit, but Krydike's something else. He'll chew our asses off, patrons or no, if he thinks we're hanging around useless, getting in the way. Denny had been thinking about just that. Leave it to me. She led him into the jostling crowd, touching Flipper and Fluke to pry a passage through the press. Most of the Fen moved aside on catching a glimpse of the two humans. Denny looked about the squeaking, clicking mob. Shouldn't Tom Worley be here? He and Hannes and Tisht were in on the rescue. I've got to talk to him sometime soon. Toshio looked like a very tired young man. Just out of decon, he slowly peeled off his dry suit while speaking with Krydike. Soon he floated naked, but for a face mask. Dabs of synthetic skin coated his hands and throat and face. Kipiru drifted nearby. The exhausted dolphin wore a breather, probably under physician's orders. Suddenly, the spectators blocking Denny's view began to spin about and dart away in all directions. Bands of idle gawkers ceased their vain eavesdropping, lest the nets of Iki find them for their lack of work and purpose. The sudden cetacean dispersal buffeted Denny and Emerson. In moments, the crowd had thinned. Krydike's voice pursued the fleeing spacers. All is done here. Think clear thoughts and do your jobs. A dozen Fen remained, outlock personnel and the captain's aides. Krydike turned to Toshio. Go on, that little shark biter. Finish your story. The boy blushed, nonplussed by the honorific. He forced his heavy eyelids open and tried to maintain a semblance of standard posture in the drifting current. That's about it, sir. I've told you everything Mr. Orley and Tisht told me about their plans. If the E.T. wreck looks usable, they'll send a sled back for help. If not, they'll return with whatever they've salvaged as quickly as possible. Krydike made small, slow circles with his lower jaw. A hazardous gamble, he commented. They'll not reach the hulk for a day, at least. More days still will pass without contact. Bubbles rose from his blowmouth. Very well, then. You shall rest, then join me for supper. I'm afraid your reward for saving Hikahi, and possibly all our lives, shall be an interrogation worse than you'd receive from our enemies. Toshio smiled tiredly. I understand, sir. I'll happily let you ring me of info, so long as I can eat first, and get dry for a while. Done. Until then. The captain nodded and turned to go. Denny was about to shout to Krydike when someone else called out first. Captain, please, may I have a word? The voice was musical. The speaker, a large male dolphin with the mottled gray coloration of a Stenos subbreed. He wore civilian harness without the bulky racks or heavy manipulator arms carried by the regular crew. Denny cringed behind Emerson Dianiti. She hadn't noticed Saud in the crowd until he spoke. Before you go, sir, the dolphin fluted quite casual, I must ask leave to visit that island where Hikahi was stranded. With a tail flick, Krydike arched bottom side up to regard the speaker skeptically. Talker to races, this is not a fish brew bar, this island, where poetry can buy back an error. Why venture now courage you never before displayed? Despite her dislike of the civilian specialist, Denny felt sympathy. Saut's behavior at the derelict fleet, refusing to go with the doomed survey party, had not been admirable, but he had been proven right. The captain's gig and 10 crew had been lost, along with Streaker's former second-in-command. All the sacrifice had gained them was a 3-meter-long tube of some strange metal, thoroughly pitted by ages of micrometeorite impacts, recovered personally by Tom Orley. Gillian Baskin had taken over the sealed relic, and to Denny's knowledge nobody else had seen it since. It hardly seemed worth the loss they had suffered. "Captain," Sout answered, "Thomas Orley has gone on to investigate the wrecked warship, but the island still concerns us." No fair. Denny had been ready to do this. It was to be an act of professionalism, of assertion, to speak out and demand. "Honestly, Captain," Sout went on, "after our duty to escape this trap and serve the clan of Earth species, what urgent responsibility has fallen upon us?" Krydike obviously wanted to chew Sout's dorsal fin for baiting him like this, and obviously Sout had hit him with a double harpoon, lacing the word duty into a riddle. The captain thrashed his tail, giving out a low series of broadband sonar clicks, like a watch ticking. His eyes were recessed and dark. Denny couldn't wait for the captain to figure the puzzle or slap Sout into a cell. "The Abos!" she shouted. Krydike turned. Denny blushed as she felt his field of analytic sound sweep over her. She knew the waves penetrated her very viscera, revealing everything down to her breakfast. Krydike frightened her. She felt far from being patron to the powerful, involute mind behind that broad forehead. The captain whirled back to Toshio. "You still have those artifacts that were selected, young hunter?"
"Yes, sir, I..."
"You will please lend them to biologist Sudman and race speaker Sout before you retire. When you're rested, collect them again along with the specialist's recommendations. I will examine them myself during supper." Toshio nodded. The captain flipped to face Denny. "Before I give permission, you must have a plan. You'll get little material assistance and will be recalled at any sign of danger. Can you accept these conditions?"
Yes. We'll need a monofilament cable to the ship for a computer link and..."
"Talk this over with Kipiro before he rests. He must help you come up with something militarily acceptable."
"Kipiro? But I thought..."
Denny looked at the younger dolphin and quickly bit back the tactlessness she had been about to utter. Silently wearing his breather, the pilot seemed unhappier than ever. "I have my reasons, Femser. As a pilot, he is of little use while we are immobile. I can spare him from work here to be your field liaison, if I agree to your plan." The captain's attention made Kipiro hunch slightly and look away. Toshio put a hand on Kipiro's sleek back. That, too, was a change. The two had never struck Denny as fast friends before. Krydike's teeth shone in the bright lights of the bay.
"Is there more comment?"
Everyone was silent. Krydike thrashed his tail, then whistled the phrase of command termination. He arched and sped away with rapid, powerful strokes. His aides followed in his wake. Kipiro watched until his captain passed out of sight. Then he addressed Denny and Sout. "At your service, you will find me, in my quarters, floating, breathing, after seeing Toshio resting." Toshio smiled when Denny gave him a brief hug. Then he turned to swim away, arm over Kipiro's back, keeping to the fin's slow pace. Just then, one of the intra-hull lift tubes opened, and a blue and yellow shape bulleted out of the tube. A joyful racket filled the chamber as the ship's other midshipmen speared past Kipiro and the boy, then zoomed around them in ever-tightening circles, chattering excitedly.
Do you think Toshio's going to get any sleep?
Emerson asked.